Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about...
What's the difference between an officer and a soldier? Or a person just coming into a store and an interior decorator? I'm just going to go through that a bit to talk a bit about strategy, strategic thought, and the sort of overview that you get. And as usual, I've driving back from Katoomba, which is 1,300 metres above sea level. So within about 40 kilometres, I'll drop down a kilometre. Really, that's amazing distance. A lot of people live their life not knowing, laughing a bit about interior decorators, or sort of saying, oh, officers think they're special and all that type of stuff. And what is it? Well, I want to get down to it and then talk about other things, strategies and things, para-strategies, things which are similar to strategy, but it's not something, it's got the same function as strategy, but it's not the sort of thing that you, a planning tool, it's a planning aid. What happens is that when you normally go shopping for an item, you you've got a a lounge, and there's not enough scattered cushions about the place, and in general you've only got a small amount of money, and you just want to buy just the ideal extra scatter cushion that you are going to put on your couch. And the idea is that you're going to select that to have just the right colours. So if you've got a sort of English drawing room with all twee stuff and leather things, you're not going to buy sort of a bright thing with an I Love Kitty on it. Whereas if you're going to, if your world is sort of a poppy, teenage girl place, you will buy a little I Love Kitty or a Pokemon or something or a Disney pillow. That's going to look out of it's that, but that will look out of place in a French Renaissance or Restoration style drawing room that you've carefully put together. It will ruin the atmosphere. And so, what's happening is that people often don't question the atmosphere, and the atmosphere eventually directs everything they do. So eventually their entire life, the type of people, their friends they have, their outlook is completely set by someone who at one stage decided that they were going to decorate something in a restoration style without unwittingly, they've actually, by making a few design decisions early on, have actually created an entire flow and sequence of life. People will behave in certain ways going through. Now, I'm going to stop here pretty soon. I'm just checking that's okay. It's pretty amazing. As I'm getting better, the sort of cognitive, the look and feel of my own personal, the car feels different, but I also feel a bit different going through. So I'm going to break here and talking about, of course, your interior. After all that freaking thing, I missed the turn off, so I'll get a turn off. I'm feeling a lot better. Then I missed the turn off into that that place, but let us worry not a bit, not a sausage. So an interior decorator will have a different plan. They'll say, look, people are living in the French Restoration stuff, but look, there are youthful kids, so what we're going to do is we're going to redecorate this room such that we can have Hello Kitty, soda streams, entertainment centres, all these things which wouldn't fit in with the French Restoration style home. And so your interior decorator comes to the problem of not what colour pillow can I get. They've got an entire system of strategic framework, it's called, about how what people think they're doing, and they mix this whole series of complex things of the little components work together, and then people are thinking differently, to go through, and so they're not victims of, well, not victims, but they're not locked into a strategy. Now, the beautiful thing about a strategy is it provides a template, a setting for people to work orderly against. So people are productive if they've got a coherent strategy with which they're working with, a strategic framework with which they're working with. So the one thing you don't want to do is mix Hello Kitty cushions. Oh, God. Hello Kitty cushions in French Restoration thing. That would be bad. But equally bad is locking people into their where the furniture makes the life choice for them. So these are assets, and the assets wind up locking the persons into it. I'll be back in a short while. Okay, we're back again, and we've just talked about the role of the interior decorator is actually a liberator. People may actually be held prisoner by the artifacts that surround them. So that's, you know, so if you only have, in a certain sense, we can sort of see it. So there are some places in that there's places buildings which are designed without places for books. People don't tend to accumulate books, and eventually they don't read it, and eventually it goes here. So one of the things that people notice when they're an educator and they do home visits, the people who've got literacy problems as children don't seem to have books in that place. And so this is this complex interplay between, we're not just the individual, we're the individual plus the artifacts plus the structure, and our sensation that we are choosing something is really not. We can often choose things within the parameters of what that's right, just sticking my microphone still there, just of what's actually come to be. And of course, the central issue I'm looking at is trying to deconstruct, are we teaching science to fit in with the demonstrations systems we have at hand, or is that constraining us, or can we do something better? And and if you're going to do that better, what is the equivalent of an officer or an interior decorator in this situation? Let's talk about an officer, for instance. Now, if you haven't been trained as an officer, a military officer, and I must admit, I've only been in officer training as an NCO and not as one of the officers itself. So perhaps I've been spared, I've been liberated from that. But the overall idea is that strategy for the soldiers, people, is a tool. It's that sort of common operating strategy is a program that you follow, and the idea is that if everyone follows it, everything works together. It's a sort of a distributed program that you can place through the system, and you do your strategy, and you're given a strategy, you're trained in a strategy. Whereas an officer is, strategy is is a tool, an optional tool that you can look at, and you can look at developing new strategies, or how strategies works, or what the strategy of the other person is. You think at a strategic level. And this is not saying often people think differently. They think officers, they like themselves, and they're sort of a bit off to themselves and stuff like that. And this is the artifacts that you place around an officer in an officer's mess and that type of stuff are to disengage them from the it's something which you put in items which will distract and put creativity, and you want people to experiment and risk and do it. So an officer is pretty much like an interior decorator for an army in terms of that high enough up they will select directions to go and training and systems and make these high level decisions which will go through. Now the interesting thing is that it's only when you are in talking with other officers, ex-officers, that it all makes sense. That of course people are not going to quite understand what's going on because they haven't been trained in this aspect. I haven't really captured it, but the entire idea is strategy. And essentially, if you have one strategy, you will lose 10% of your force and you achieve your goal. Or you can have another strategy which you lose 8% of your force. Now, that's nothing, but that really matters if you're that 2% who are alive at the end of the process. It doesn't add up the way it in terms of your values and what you see important is there. And this is really interesting because in this education space, people say, oh, look, we're running an education system and we're getting 80% of the people through. You might tweak it and we might get 83%. Well, that 3% is very bloody important. You know, this is what we're fighting for. This is what we're here. We're here for that tiny amount. So the theory again is that if I have old demonstrations and old ways of explaining things and old systems for doing it, we're going to produce something which is not strategically optimum. Now, it's going to cause pain and training and a whole lot of things to change what we do. And of course, a lot of these things require a investment. Now, in business process re-engineering, you have to create slack. You have to create resources in order to change. You can actually be in crisis mode the entire time, and it's sort of like everyone's fighting a fire and you on a ship, and you drift into the into a field of icebergs. So you're fighting the fire and navigating icebergs, and then you drift into shallow water. So you're fighting a fire, icebergs, shallow water, blah, blah, blah. And at no point in time did you ever had a chance to steer the ship out into calm waters, put out the fire, and steam ahead. Instead, you're fighting all these fires going forward. So you have to create a space for it. And it is understandable what we tend to do is rather than give everyone 10 minutes a day for creativity, we tend to select out of the, or say 10% of your time for creativity, we tend to spend 10% of the people to be completely creative so they can actually get something done. So that's just a process. And of course, this is what has happened to me a little bit in that the idea is, you know, we're going to discard you. You're off. You're ho, ho, ho. Look at you. We've kicked you. You put you in your dungeon. We've discarded you. And look at him. He's like putting on that. This is going to make people cringe, but you get a bit of me time on a crucifix. You know, a bit of time to contemplate. A bit of time to take in the view. A bit of time to think and ponder, and of course you're being crucified, but you can actually do a bit of MacGyver, you know, whatever happens, it's that you're put forward. Now, we want to talk about, we've got all this idea, with the idea of the interior decorator coming in, transforming the strategic situation, offices, which is more formalised, that an officer over a period of time, there's certain things that happen, the way that they think strategically, and the overall view. Now, this interesting is that interior decorator is very much a room, power, stuff like that. An officer, very few of them get to do the entire army or the whole system. These things tend to scale up such that they sort of drown, things at a certain scale drown up. So, say if you're a space program, you can't do it. And this gets the general idea of between a merchandisable, embodiment. That is something which can be on an industrial scale transferred in and out of a system. So once it becomes merchandisable, it becomes highly valuable because it can be stored, transferred, used, and stuff like that. Once it's declared merchandisable, before it's merchandisable, you've got to have all these people worrying about it. Does it work? You need it. It's something which requires human attention coming forward. So what actually often happens is that officers, interior decorators, they have a play space, a model space, which they can deal with the prototype strategies or prototype systems and just check that they work, just run through that it works, because there's only so much information you can do at on an abstract level. Sometimes you've got to do concrete, put things together, because there's sort of two reasons. One is that your knowledge is imperfect. You can't think of anything. You can only think of so many things. The actual embodiment will actually stimulate the full ask question in a certain level. And also the information is unclear. So if you know that you have something, a quality between, say, 20 and 30%, you just can't work out what does that really affect what's going on. It's these really subtle questions, so you have to do it. So this all builds up to it. And so the question that we're sort of looking at is, does what we produce is it that we are a victim? Are we actually somehow stuck in a system with these instruments and methodologies? Is that actually going to affect it? And of course, obviously, people would say the first easy bit is to say, oh, yes, it is. The second bit is, how do you actually think your way through it? And it requires a sort of several levels of space. There's a sort of a very much materialistic material thing is that I can solve it with this solution and this will do that, and then you can argue close looking reasons for doing things. So there is a reason for putting everything in exactly the same box, because it means that it's now controllable, manageable on a new digital scale. So you're turning, whereas before you had to have in the old telephone system, you had to have an actual switch girl in every city. Used to be at least one or two switch girls, or probably armies of them, that'd be there all the time. They had to do this process. And this is truly what the science demonstrations, they require actually a full-time employed person there to get them going. And it's great. You can, in emergency, the switch girl can actually fault read, and there are these heroic stories of these people doing these things. But it's not necessarily the best. So you can actually close describe saying that we want to move away from that. But there is a bigger picture going through. And it's been able to go to your classic management diagram of two axes and say, we're positioned here, we're going to move here on a graphic. So high high labour put in input, low yield, but such and such this, high reliability. So we've got this large system. We've got to there's normally a void and a graph which you have to move into, and that's almost stock standard MBA stuff. This two-axis graph, and you know, this is the opposition, this is us, and this is the new space to move in on a Cartesian graph. What I have is a slightly different theory, and it's sort of from, I suppose, a bit of quantum mechanics or advanced maths of a Hilbert space, where you can imagine a space, a linear line of different solutions. You line them up and they're each different. Now, quantum mechanics is quite easy because the actual wave functions differ by quantum numbering, so you can advance your quantum numbers and have all these different wave functions in a structure, and a lot of things work together. But we're going to develop a three-dimensional space to work through. So I go through, grind through all these absolutely delightful, can I say, delightful school zones. I'm down at 40 kilometres an hour. Okay, so we've got, where are we going? We've got, this is the reflection. Now, this is so bloody hard to explain and put forward, but we are going to put forward a three-dimensional space. Now, one space, one dimension is all the demonstrations. If you pile them up, all the demonstrations in a line, so on an axis, you can imagine all the demonstrations. Then they're not ordered in a particular way yet, but you might have simple elementary school demonstrations at one end, and at the other end you might have advanced university demonstrations, and in the middle you'll have sort of demonstrations that do certain things. But the important thing is that we've got a space and we're going to line them all up. And bottom line is that once you see them all lined up, you can say, oh, if you imagine them, because everyone's imagining them individually, if you imagine them all lined up, you say, well, okay, at this stage we can patch the whole lot of them such that they're in a box and I can stack them. So you have this imaginary system that people have imagined, demonstrations on the shelves. I've imagined them, reimagined them, and so they're all in boxes, and so that way you can actually remove one box, remove and replace, and high speed out there. Now, that's on the x-axis. On the y-axis, we have basically for a particular item, it's a figure of merit with it. So if you, this is where a figure of merit allows you to actually, I don't know, conceptually put together a whole lot of factors together and put it into one numbers and one axis. And this is, the idea is to put it into one axis, but the sort of major figure of merit I'm looking at is scientific rigor. So over time, as we understand more about what a wave function is or what an electron is and things like that, the the description which, say, had of an apparatus which had a figure of merit 3, there is now a potential greater figure of merit to move for. That's where things are described in a different way. If you can see, the demonstration is designed in spirit for the figure of merit 3, the new figure of merit, or the new rigor, level of rigor 4, it's achievable, but it's not been designed to do it. So like, the design is, your position on the x-axis is done, your ability to move in the y-direction is limited by your design. However, there's conceptual spaces up there. So you've got this idea that you can go to a higher level of rigor with a bit more design involved in it. So already, just by doing this interior decoration space, I have two things. I've got the boxing and I have the idea of the advancement of rigor. Now, there might be other figures of merit in terms of student interactivity or whatever it is, and I can all sort of at will get them. And then the major thing is that there's little correlation between, or consolation between, say, rigor and student interactivity. So there's little point in creating two separate graphs, because they don't, you may as well just put them all together in one figure of merit. So unfortunately, this is the mathematical mind. People say, you're good at maths, like you're good at English, you should be able to fill in a crossword. Yes, good at maths, you can solve problems, but it also allows you to write Shakespeare, for instance. See, like, you can be creative with your maths, and this is something which is difficult. So let's move to where we're going through here. There's the idea of the interior decorator, the strategic thinker. So it's strategy and a prototype strategy. This is where it's not a merchandisable strategy. You're just playing with it at the moment, going through, and playing with it is that you've got this much broader canvas that things could be. You've got the range of styles, from Hello Kitty to French Renaissance to 50s to 40s to, a cool 1970s kitchen, all those things. You've got that variable that you're thinking. So the essential thing of an interior decorator is this axis, this variability that they've suddenly put everything into, and the backstory of what's going on. And the idea that the participants will, by thinking differently, the items won't necessarily transfer forward. We've got two axes. Obviously, three axes is probably the thing to actually think of. And this is the time axis. So if I was going to put everything down and put a date, if I was going to draw this sheet of paper with the x-axis of all the demonstrations, the y-axis of this rigor, maybe, on the other thing, and I was going to have that as a sheet, and then as years progress, I add the sheets higher and higher up in a layer, I'd produce a three-dimensional thing, and I would be able to see, as time progresses, the number of demonstrations increase and change, the rigor move forward a little bit and go forward. What that time tells you is that there is a process for going across. You just can't actually say, bang, wham, and the stain is gone. There's this process which goes through forward, and there is this sort of horticultural look of training the actual training the demonstrations to evolve. And that going all the way back through here, you've got this other process of saying, well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to position this demonstration to sit on top precisely without any issue the existing demonstration. It will completely replace it. And if you've got any problem of A does not equal B, well, A does equal B, but A encompasses B, or B is A plus extras, and the plus extras do not detract from the what is A. This is essentially how things go. This is sort of following the observed law of evolution. It costs nothing to do. there's all this thing, and now trying to bloody well express this is just so hard. And so let's go back. There, we've got the basically the strategic thinker, and the strategic thinker thinks of on two levels. I'm just going to actually sneeze here. Oh, sorry, that's. That is absolute delight. So, I've just, if you know, the people who've been following, I've had my valve, heart valve replaced. And before, sneezing was an absolutely terrifying experience. Now I enjoy a good sneeze. It just feels boof. I mean, you don't feel as though you're going to blow up inside. It's, oh, I just can't describe how good it is. That's great. I can't sneeze again. I don't want to, but there's something. And also, there's the sunshine coming in. It's in the morning, and I think Aristotle was one of the first people to describe the sneezing, the effect of sunshine and heat on your face causing sneezing to occur, called a photic sneeze, one of the most ancient rituals of being human, that's of being any sort of animal. I think reptiles don't sneeze, but most mammals sneeze. Mice, rats, there's something us fur-covered, milk-producing creatures have actually got going down. Okay, let's get back to it. We've got the idea of the difference is that the storeroom person will, your soldier in the field will look at the strategy of, I have to read the strategy in order to get my job done. So a storeroom person in a school or a teacher will say, well, look, thanks all very well, but I have to, next Monday, I have to get out a demonstration and show it. So what you're saying to me is just, absolutely, you stupid person, get out of my way, because you are adding that 10% extra information I can't use. And it's sort of like talking to your soldier at the pit front saying, well, do you think we should start flanking these people a bit more? That will go, what the you can understand the irritation with it. However, we're not going to win a war. We're not going to win. And win the war for me is, and for an officer and stuff like that, is bringing home two extra soldiers, bring home three extra students at the end, or someone may learn, may not do anything, it may be absolute failure. But that information can be used at a critical point to actually change a situation for good. So it's the definition of good is not actually, do I have a job? Do they have the maximum career stuff? Is that, can this person actually work out what's happening and live a better life? So there's lots of cases where I've had the training and it's just been used for a couple of minutes. That's either save someone's life or it's so the metric that we look at is also stuffed as well. So so these people don't, if you ask them to look at all this, they'll go, you're crazy. However, it's that sort of craziness which is the canvas to go forward. And it's when you actually talk about this canvas that you actually have the following things. You have the fundamental idea of a packaging which encompasses all, so you've now got this fluidity. You have this ability that you can ship a box back and take an upgraded box. You know, it does the next the box can be taken back or the software can be upgraded. And it's amazing how there are certain areas where we become addicted to the latest thing. This is mobile phones, operating systems. We become addicted to very fluid aspects of it.
And that's great. And so we don't really need another another mobile phone invention, but we do need a sort of the mobile phone ethos to go into experiments. That seems to be a real fundamental aspect of it. And there seems to be a lot of areas in life which I encounter. This is old soldiers groups, old history groups, where the progression forward is not building a web page. It is a far more subtle thing of working out what to do. So this is very similar here. The success here is not the number of units I can produce. The success here is if I can bloody well write a research paper on it. I'm almost at the stage of throwing out one research paper and starting from scratch on it. So this is like this huge, long, complex thing in terms of, and again, research papers, the idea is subject matter, application result. It's a very simple thing. Here is a bit more complicated because here is subject matter, completely new way of thinking, and then these are the results suggested from it. So that's the the application. So you can see there's the application up front is that there's a another step in here which makes expression that much more complicated. It's like a four-step process is so much more difficult. It's got so many more moving parts to get right. So there are four steps in it. There's introduce the subject matter, completely new way of thinking, processes and results, and the people who are conditioned to doing this, this is completely new way of thinking, is the sort of thing that you talk in strategy schools or interior decorations or strategic things. This new way of thinking, that's of course that's the key to it. And of course it's not necessarily it's like you need this secondary thing to pull out. You have to teach people one, that you need a new way of thinking, and two, it's okay to have this new way of thinking. Now what we do is that what we do is rather than explain to everyone what's going on, we have this system where we, rather than actually make that a step that anyone can do, we can say, well look, so this is all clear, that we know that that new way of thinking people are clearly delineated, they're separated, we have a term for you, and a social system which we wrap around you as an officer or some of this thing to make sure that you do not get tasks with the execution of it. We don't want you thinking up a new way halfway through. We want you doing it. So we give you a different title and a different structure to get through. So this is where I find I've got this sort of the double trouble. One is the mechanisms of writing the research paper, and this is the broad structure, the sentential writing mechanisms, and then going right down the actual processes of it. There's that mechanism, and the fact that the mechanism is to do something different. So everyone is expecting a car to be produced, and you've got several challenges in front of you in terms of, say, well, for me it's a bit, you know, you're looking at all the parts together and you're a bit, when I say the word brain damage, I don't think that's quite it, because I often find that when I ask people a question, they're stumped as well. They're not trying to do the same. They very rarely attempt to do the same thing. So you're trying to build this car from scratch. Now, most people say, well, what the heck's going on? You have these things pre-assembled for you. So there's like these three things. Mostly the ideas are pre-assembled, and the idea is that you assemble a car. Now, what's an actual fact I'm trying to do is assemble an aircraft. I'm actually having to switch off from people saying, give up, you're doing the, you know, go back, you're going the wrong way, because, what can I say, you have to switch off in terms of that, you know, you're imagining you're in a village and no one has seen an aircraft, no one's seen anyone ever fly. The concept of you tinkering around in the back, you're just a mad person. It's that. Way to go. Now, having said that, I really have to actually go back and actually get the engine. So I've got this research paper to actually probably express what I'm doing. And this is the horrible thing. Sometimes I write the research paper and it tells me where to go. This is this entire thing. It's sort of like in Castaway. And you're having a conversation with Wilson. You've got to listen really carefully because Wilson doesn't say very much. In fact, Wilson is really basically all the notes that you've written or your personality has put to it, and you really need that foil, that sort of social foil to go through. So the research paper provides that. But also it is basically the treadmill, the thing going forward, and I have written a code in such a way that it goes across. Now, what I in general find is that my expression of sentences and clauses, I've got a structure to actually force it to forces me to put one idea per paragraph in a structure in a way which does a link. You know, it's just really hard. However, I need to actually break this up even further and have every sentence breaken up in clauses and such that I can actually swap the clauses around. So what I will do is maximum of four, or probably two clauses, one or two, I'll have three clauses, but make a readability, I'm going to have the capacity for three clauses per sentence, and then those three clauses get strung together. I might have the last one, punctuation. That would be cool, have a punctuation there. So four columns, three clauses are punctuation. That gets put together to be a sentence. Oh, Christ. It makes me think that I'm going to have to go here. And those six or maximum of 10 sentences make up a paragraph. One idea per paragraph, so I've got to do it, and so I may slog through and produce it here. It's such a rough idea, and so and the thing is that if you follow this, you produce a very clear, long paper. Now, the problem with a clear, long paper is that when someone first reads it, they understand it. It's just then that your reviewers get really worn out by such a long, clear paper. The very first, sort of like, that's really good. It's like a burning, starting a fire. If you put in firelight, it glows up really hot really quickly and gets going, but then there's nothing to sustain it in the long run. So I've got to really, I suppose, work up out of structure. So you can see me working structure upon structure. So I'm just going to intersect these two structures and write it down. And here I'm coming back. Okay, going around the corner here. Thank you very much. I can't believe it. In our little sleepy village, there's what I say, a six-car traffic jam. There's six cars waiting to cross. That's waiting to cross the highway. Now, occasionally you do get asked by Google Maps to turn right onto this highway, and of course you will never be able to do it because the actual turn right from a side street onto a highway gives you an idea of what the highway is like. It's not a freeway. It's a highway. The highway to go across. So I have got this thing to assemble. Bloody hell, and get it across. And as you know, it's this real problem of just not the full brain operating. You know, it's a bit scrambled one area, but a bit of it's coming back to work across. And it's to try and execute this strategy. I'm just now coming home. So thanks a lot for listening. It's good having you company as I drive all the way back from Katoomba.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.